I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
I feel like with all the vacations we've had going on and me being sick, I can't remember the last time I recorded our podcast.
Well, I know. They're all different days. We were consistently always doing it on the Wednesday ahead of a Monday release. And now we've gotten off kilter and it's like we don't know when we're doing them. We just try to get together and try to get research done and get them up. And then when we try to catch up, then you got to do like two almost back to back. It's weird.
It is. I don't know whether we're going or coming.
Or coming or going. It's always too soon.
Well, it seems like...
That was a Blazing Saddles reference.
What did you say?
Madeline Kahn.
What did you say though?
She sang that song about the men in her life. They're always going and coming and coming and going. Always too soon.
I remember that.
That's my Madeline Kahn impression. It was, for those of you that are 100 like me and remember who that is.
I remember who it is. I'm not 100. It was not bad. You want another wiener schnitzel? Nine's my limit. Well, anyway, time does kind of get away from you a little bit sometimes, I think, when we're recording these.
It does. They overlap. It's like, what did we talk about last?
And speaking of time, sometimes there's delays with court cases.
Oh, man. Sometimes there are.
That's what you call a tie-in.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Sydney always does that on still buffering for the girls. Every once in a while, the other ones fill in, but usually that's Sydney's job. So we don't do a very good job of that. We just clown around and then say, oh, here we're going to talk about something now.
Sydney's the segue person?
Yeah, she does the segues.
She does the segue tour for still buffering?
Yeah, I would fall off of one if I did a segue.
That's probably true.
Just like I fell over Charlie on the cruise ship.
I heard about that. I heard it was like slow motion.
Oh my gosh, it was terrible.
So you had like, weren't you like carrying different trays and drinks? And
I was loaded down with bowls and spoons and cereal and milk, and we're trying to find a seat to go to sit for breakfast on the last morning on the ship. We have to hurry up and eat and then be ready to depart. And I took Charlie up to go to breakfast, and so I gathered all the stuff, and she was just carrying her little box of Rice Krispies, and I had my cereal and her bowls and my milk and our spoons and carrying it. So we're going along, and I said, well, we got to find a place to sit. And I said, oh, I see one. And I started left, and she decided she saw one, and she started right. She cut right in front of me, and I hit the back of her foot, and I just did a flip right over top of her because I didn't want to land on her. And cereal and milk and bowls and spoons went flying everywhere, and poor Charlie fell right down on the ground, and I did a complete flip, hoping not to hit my knees since they both were reconstructed recently, and everybody came running over to help the poor baby and the old man laying there in the aisle.
I'm just picturing like a Chevy Chase, Gerald Ford type scene from Saturday Night Live.
Oh my gosh. I wish somebody had videoed it just so I could see how it went down. All I know is that it was wild, but it was a heck of a way to end the cruise.
Well, court cases generally have different time frames that they're supposed to go forward with. So basically almost kind of like, I guess, deadlines. Well, it depends. Civil cases don't really have much of a deadline. It's kind of at the court's discretion. Criminal cases are generally governed by different kinds of constitutional law and things like that. Your specialty cases, like, for example, in West Virginia, abuse and neglect cases here in West Virginia, they have very strict time procedures as well. And that's mandated by West Virginia code. But most of the time, when you think about these criminal cases and the timelines going on, they're protections that are for the defendant. And it's not necessarily a protection for the state to have to do something by a certain time. It's mainly the defendant can be prejudiced by not going forward in a certain time. One of the things in particular is the Speedy Trial Clause of the Sixth Amendment of the United States, which I think we've talked about that maybe before. And basically what it reads is that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial. It's pretty straightforward.
Doesn't really define, it leaves it open to interpretation what a speedy trial is, but it does say they deserve one.
It does. The clause generally protects the defendant from sort of undue delay when they're going forward from when they've been indicted by the grand jury and going to trial. Typically in West Virginia, that means that they have the right to be tried in the same term of court as the grand jury that indicted them. So the grand jury meets four times a year. So basically that means they basically have the right to be tried within, you know, 3 or 4 months of being indicted. And what that does is it keeps them from kind of languishing in this limbo state where they're awaiting trial.
Because they're either in prison or they're out on bail.
Yeah. And basically that because think about it, if there wasn't some sort of time constraint saying that it had to go forward, you know, the prosecution could just say, well, we haven't got the discovery to him yet. We'll get it to him eventually and just keep, you know,
dragging it out.
Lollygagging, not getting it to him.
Well, amongst us defense lawyers, there's a saying. It goes, justice delayed is justice denied.
Amongst you defense lawyers?
Yeah.
Who do you consider yourself a peer with?
Well, somebody who's really in bad shape. They got me as a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, but I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. So.
Now, if there's sort of gamesmanship going on and people trying to stall up the court proceedings, there's a term for that, and it's called dilatory tactics. And dilatory tactics are methods by which the rules of procedure are used by a party to a lawsuit in an abusive manner to delay the progress of the proceedings. So, for example, Macy, if you're bringing like a bunch of different motions before the court, they don't really have much merit to them, but you're just filing motions after motions after motions, and the court has to keep ruling on these different motions, then you're really not letting the case go forward, and you're kind of stalling it. And the party in whose interest the motion is brought uses the tactic to kind of gain time or enhance their position or postpone an action as long as possible to try to get the case more in the posture that they want.
Or they know they're going to lose, so they're just trying to put off the inevitable.
Exactly. Parties that are found to do this, to engage in dilatory tactics, can be held in contempt of court. So basically, the judge finds that you've been using dilatory tactics, then basically they can find you in contempt of court. So, now, I mean, I think all cases have some dilatory tactics to kind of slow the onslaught of litigation at certain points to and fro. But the important thing is here is that the motions and these things are baseless. So if they have absolutely no base whatsoever, if there is an argument to a good faith argument to be made, it wouldn't be dilatory. You're just basically doing your job by filing all the possible motions you can. So, you know, you might have a long shot motion, but you might win it. Who knows?
I'm sure if you're going to do that, you're going to have some type of reasoning, no matter how far you're stretching it, as to why this is something that you're filing. I mean, if they asked you, wouldn't you say, oh, I don't know, I thought it was a good idea. You'll have something that you'll throw out there, probably.
Yeah, you'll have a reason.
Say, well, this is why we did it, even though it may be so far-fetched no one would even think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, there might be reasons why people do this. Like, for example, if you are a defense attorney in a case and you have the luxury of having a client who is able to spend more, and you think, okay, one of our tactics is we're going to make them litigate every single issue possible. So we're going to file motion after motion. We're going to fight them on every single front.
And then it'll make it expensive for them and they might give up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, or it's kind of like, I guess, to put it in a kind of an example of like a physical altercation, you know, somebody says basically they want to fight you. I am going to beat you up and I'm going to take your lunch money. Mm-hmm. Well, if they come after you trying to take your lunch money, or what they think is maybe their lunch money rather, and you punch them in the face a few times, they might not be so eager to come and try to take that lunch money again. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, so you kind of, they almost lose their zest for litigation once they have to pay some of the costs for it a little bit.
Yeah.
So that can be kind of more of a psychological type thing that goes on as well with regard to a case.
In the physical shape I'm in, I got to avoid that because I can neither run nor fight. I've only got one good arm and two bad legs. I just stand there and be a punching bag.
You tried playing possum?
I would just lay down. Just lay down.
I'm saying play possum.
Help!
Nope, don't make noise.
Curl up in a fetal position. Curl up, they don't notice me.
Curl up and act dead.
I'll just be a speed bump. They trip over me.
There you go. There's something to be said for that. And they get too close, just latch onto their ankles with your teeth. Now, one of the other things that in criminal cases, another rule, is that basically the prompt presentment rule. And this is basically a federal rule of criminal procedure that requires police to take a person that they've arrested before a magistrate judge without unnecessary delay. So basically, that means that when somebody's arrested, they have to come directly to a magistrate judge for their first appearance. U.S. Code 18 U.S.C., which is U.S. Code. Let me try that again. 18 U.S. Code 35.0 or 3501 provides that a confession that is voluntary will be admissible, and also says that it will not be admissible solely because of delay of bringing a person before a magistrate judge if such confession is found by the trial judge to have been made voluntarily within 6 hours of arrest. So basically, if you're interrogating somebody, you've placed them under arrest, and you're interrogating them, and you don't take them promptly to the magistrate, even if they confess, you could actually have that confession thrown out because they haven't taken them quickly to the magistrate judge for a prompt presentment.
But that's if you arrest them.
Yeah.
And most time when you're interrogating somebody, you haven't arrested them until they say something that you decide, and then you say, now you're under arrest.
Right.
And then you'd take them to the magistrate.
Well, this could be a situation where, like, you talk to somebody and you think there's enough, so you arrest them, you put them in a cell, you let them sit there overnight or for a day and a half, and then they finally say, well, you know what, here's the truth, blah, blah, blah. Then you take them to the judge. Mm. So, I mean, that would definitely violate the prompt presentment. But again, that's another time constraint that is beneficial to a defendant in a criminal case. So you see that more often. Like I said, it's usually geared towards the defendant. One example I found was an interesting case. There was a guy named Johnny Corley, and he was arrested by federal officers at 8 a.m., was detained until 11:45 a.m. when he was taken to a hospital for a minor injury. At 3:30, he was taken from the hospital to an FBI office rather than to the magistrate, and he began an oral confession at 5:27, about 9.5 hours after his arrest. At trial, he moved to suppress the confession, which the trial court denied. The immediate court affirmed, and the case was accepted by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled that the fact that the confession was voluntary, even if delayed, does not make it admissible, because that would render superfluous Section 3501C's language, rendering voluntary confessions admissible if made within 6 hours of arrest. So
that was quite confusing to say that the confession was good or bad.
Yeah.
They could have come out and said that a lot plainer.
Well, but that's not how you do it in law.
Yeah, I know. That's so that us laymen don't understand what you're saying. You can pull one over on us.
Yeah. But so again, you can see that most of the case law and most of the stuff you see is geared towards prejudicing the defendant in a criminal case. Mm-hmm. That's where you have, I would say, 95 to 97% of your time constraint things in cases like this. So now there are some instances though, where there's delay and it's going the other way. And somebody sent in an article about it, and I think we want to talk about that. But before that, I think we want to get into maybe a quick motion before the court.
Well, if it please your dilatory ship, we would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
I am somewhat dilatory sometimes. I'm watered down, too.
You're watered down? We have with us today, proud to return, Audible.
So what would it be like if we all just listen more?
Well, listening to audiobooks inspires us, motivates us, it even brings us closer together.
And there's no better place to listen than Audible.
Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet.
That's Earth, by the way.
Yes, the planet Earth, the one that we inhabit. dilatorily.
And now, Audible members get more than even before. Each month, they get three titles of their choice, one audiobook, two Audible originals, and fitness programs they can't get anywhere else.
Well, we can all use fitness programs, can't we, old Mike?
Absolutely can. I need more fitness because I've been sick for a while and I'm feeling out of shape.
Yeah, and I'm just plain old. There's never been a better time to experience Audible.
One title that I recently listened to on Audible was the Beastie Boys book.
The Beastie Boys?
That's right.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
That's right. That was not did not sound like them at all.
I know. Well, I don't have a good Beastie Boy. I'm not as good with them as I am with Madeline Kahn.
You're not very good with Madeline Kahn either. But the Beastie Boys Audible book, it was amazing. And the reason I say it is they actually read their own book, which was really cool to hear in their own voice. Mm-hmm. But they had a lot of celebrities that read different sections for it. And a lot of times they would chime in and give their own kind of take on each section that they had written. So it kind of be their side of the story. They talked a lot about different music they liked and things like that. It was probably one of my favorite Audible books that I've ever listened to, actually.
Hmm. Well, I had one that's a favorite of mine.
What's that?
It's called Sawbones.
That's a good book as well.
It stars Justin McElroy and Sidney Smurl McElroy. They're two of my favorite people.
Mine too.
The ironic thing about that is, of course, their book started as a podcast, which was spoken word, and then it was a book, and then they recorded their own voices to do it for Audible.
They've done a full 360.
That's right. They went all the way around to come back to that. So that's one that I highly recommend.
Well, there's never been a better time to experience Audible. Try it free for 30 days by visiting audible.com/appointed.
Or text appointed to 500-500 and listen for a change. That's audible.com/appointed or
text appointed to 500-500.
And listen for a change. For a change in you.
Or listen for a change again.
That's right.
Now, one of our listeners had written in on our court-appointed Facebook page, Carl Barr. I like that name. It's very easy to say.
Yeah. I bet he's married to a girl named Candy.
Candy Barr?
Mm-hmm. That'd be my guess.
You may be on to something.
His dad's name was Iron.
We could probably do this all day long. You know what his favorite jiu-jitsu move is?
Arm bar?
Yeah.
They had a baby named Soap. None of this is true. Don't hold me to it.
Okay. So the article was about Georgia Speaker of House David Ralston. He is a criminal defense attorney and, as I said, the Speaker of the Georgia House. He routinely has cases put off because of his duties as Speaker of the House, and the cases get delayed over and over again. Now, why does that matter, would you think? Well, why do you think it matters?
Justice delayed is justice denied.
Very well said, Tommy. You're definitely one of my peers.
That's right. but one of the problems is he isn't delaying it for the defendant that he is representing. He's delaying it for the state or whatever. I mean, the whole Sixth Amendment, it says that the defendant shall not be, shall have a speedy trial.
Shall not be unduly prejudiced.
Right. Yeah. And shall have a speedy trial. If you're on the other side of that coin, it doesn't say anything about what it does for you. You don't have any rights.
That's right. What he does basically, he has one client, David Shell, and this article we were citing to, basically he's a repeat domestic batterer, was indicted nearly 4 years ago and is facing 20 years. He hasn't gone to trial yet. But here's the thing. That's not even like the most egregious of the delays in these cases.
No, it is not.
The Atlantic Journal Constitution did a joint investigation with Channel 2 Action News in Atlanta, and they found that Ralston appears to be misusing the power of his public office to benefit his private law practice. What he does basically is he writes letters to the judges declaring court dates interfere with his lawmaking duties and cites to a Georgia law from 1905. And he's basically been able to keep cases perpetually off the docket.
Yeah. And so you keep them off the docket. And what happens is they get 5, 6, 10 years old, and then witnesses aren't available anymore. People forget things. I mean, like, if there's a cop that's supposed to testify, maybe that cop's not even a cop anymore by the time they come around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the things change, and it's, and he's doing this on purpose, and he's doing it. He's, I don't know. I don't think he can actually advertise it, but everyone knows that that's what he'll do. So that a lot of people go to him, and he's gaining money. His firm is gaining money because of his notoriety for this.
Yeah, he's tied up cases for, charged with child molestation, child cruelty, assault, terroristic threats, drunk driving and other crimes. So, I mean, the full different kinds of criminal cases. I mean, it's not surprising because if you're a criminal lawyer, you represent people that do pretty much are accused of bad things. But
the thing that I saw said 10 years ago, a grand jury indicted a Georgia man on charges of illicit sexual behavior with young teens. One of the alleged victims, and it's been so long since he'd heard from prosecutors, he figured the case was over with. But it's not. It's among dozens of criminal cases repeatedly delayed from going to court. Well, 14 times in the case of this, in this one.
Now, you might think it sounds kind of seedy, but if you think about it, if you are charged with some sort of crime against a minor, having somebody appear in front of the jury who looks like an adult is actually a benefit to you because they don't see, they're not as, not viewed as a minor so much. They look
right.
Older.
Yeah.
So, you know, the prosecution would have to keep reminding the jury, like, well, you have to remember this happened 10 years ago.
Yeah, he was only 13 at the time, yeah. Not 23 like he is now.
But that's an extra hurdle that the prosecution sure. has.
Yeah.
Now, this David Shell, the one who was the domestic violence case, basically he said that's why he gave Ralston $20,000. He's worth every penny.
Yeah.
Essentially saying that the reason I hired this guy is because he can delay it like this.
So then he doesn't have to suffer the consequences of what he's done. And he can continue to batter.
Basically, what this investigation showed that he writes off these letters in bulk. So basically, it's not even like he does it occasionally, like, well, to the judge, you know, judge, I have this one case pending. I'm going to be out of town this date, blah, 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 blah. He just writes it off and says essentially almost like
all my cases.
I'm Speaker of the House. All my cases. Thank you very much. Yada, yada. So please be advised. Here's one basically verbiage from one of his letters. Please be advised that I'm hereby requesting a continuance of these three cases from the criminal calendar call, reads one of Ralston's typical letters. I hereby certify to the court that my legislative duties and obligations will require that I be elsewhere on that date. So it cites back to this law, like I said, 1905, that judges and prosecutors must defer to the legislative schedule of any practicing attorney who serves in the General Assembly. So other attorney lawmakers basically only get that exemption during their 40-day legislative sessions. So it's only during while they're in session. But since he is the Speaker of the House, his duties take him more time. And he actually gets a larger salary, too. So, I mean, he does kind of have an argument there, being the Speaker of the House, that he has more duties than the average member. But that being said, it's obvious he's not making an effort to try to push these cases forward.
Yes, but it's even more nefarious than that, though.
It is?
It is. Because why you're right that that's a, what'd you say, 1905 law?
Yep.
Well, the Atlanta Journal that you quoted there has learned that the law came about that Ralston was involved in creating it. Not in 1905, but it was revised in 2006. It said, for a century, elected lawmakers who make their living as attorneys could only cite the law to delay court while the General Assembly was in session and for 3 weeks after. But in 2006, lawmakers in the House and Senate passed Senate Bill 503, which expanded the privilege to cover any time a lawmaker's presence elsewhere is required. Originally, the bill dealt with unrelated legal issues, then passed through the House and Senate in different forms. On the final day of that year's session, Then House Speaker Glenn Richardson named Ralston, then a state representative who chaired the House Judicial Non-Civil Committee, to a joint conference committee to work out the differences between the House and Senate versions. Although it is unknown what role Ralston played in conference negotiations, the legislation that emerged included the language that Ralston, who then became Speaker in 2010, would later apply to his own law practice. It came before the House for approval just 90 minutes before the session's required end at midnight and passed the House 158-2, and then the Senate unanimously. There had been an earlier attempt that year to alter the legislation, the legislative leave law, and they filed a bill expanding the leave to include committee meetings held outside of session. This bill also required the legislator lawyer to give the specific basis for the continuance and stay. That law, passed out of Ralston's conference committee, has no such requirement and did not limit the leave to committee meetings. So he didn't have to say why and didn't have to say where he was going. All he had to do was say, I want to delay it.
And he had a hand in making it, maybe.
Yeah.
And he thought, you know what? I could probably use this. This is good. I like this.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, I guess he was in on writing it, and he started thinking, you know what? I could use this to my advantage. I could become very valuable to people that don't want to have to go to trial.
Yeah. I have a, not a get out of jail free card, but a stay out of jail free card.
Yeah. I mean, there'd be like this one was where a child was killed in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't ever have the trial, here's people that maybe need the money for funeral expenses or hospital bills or stuff like that. And it's tied up for 10 years. And the person can't get what they deserve because this guy keeps putting it off.
The Georgia House has actually signed off on a resolution, at least 10 Republican House members, calling for Ralston to resign following the media reports regarding this. And it's also been set up for further exploration by the House as well to determine whether or not there's any abuse by this. So it's one of those things that they're kind of looking into right now at the point. And this is fairly recent. Mm-hmm. This expose broke in February, and the last article I saw was the beginning of March where they're calling for him to resign and things like that. So he's still in a lot of hot water over this. To give some more of those examples, like you said, there was one man's DUI case had been pending for more than a decade, delayed at least 17 times by Ralston.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was one you were talking about with the death. But I mean, for a case to have been sitting there for a decade, that would basically, like, whenever you file a motion or anything with the court, you have to put the court number or the court case number on it. And it relates to the year filed. Then usually there's some sort of designation as to what type of case it is, and then the actual number.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if you filed a new civil case today, it would be like 19C 100 or something like that. Imagine seeing a case that said 2009C 100.
Mm-hmm.
Judges around here would be losing their mind to have a 2009 case still on their docket. Judges do not like having cases like that sitting around, and that would be very odd to see that.
But see, there's a lot of them. Yes, there are 10 Republicans that signed on, because of course it's a Republican-controlled legislature down there. But there are 10 Republicans that had signed on to sanction him. But there's a lot of others that don't want to do anything because he's very powerful. He's one of the most powerful people in politics. And if you lose, if he somehow comes out on top, you're going to be punished for that, you know?
Well, so, I think what needs to happen is the Georgia bar or some judiciary needs to step in, because there's a separation of power there, and the Georgia bar or the judiciary needs to come in and sanction him for his dilatory tactics based that way.
Really?
That's what I think needs to happen. So,
but one of the things that I checked, you have a rules of professional conduct in each state that applies to lawyers.
That's true.
And I looked up the Georgia rules of professional conduct and read through it. All the things that might pertain to this all pertain to acting with delays with a detriment to your client.
Right. It doesn't hurt his client.
No. And so, he could just stand up there and say, hey, I'm not hurting my client. I'm helping my client. There's nothing that says that you have a moral obligation to do the right thing or to move the trial along or anything like that. And I really feel like that's lacking in the professional rules, that it's so one-sided, just like the Sixth Amendment.
Well,
that it only has to do with the defendant, has nothing to do with somebody that may have perpetrated, you know, the action.
No, I disagree. I don't think you need anything in the professional rules stating that you have to, like, look out for the best interest of the other side. because that's not your job. What needs to happen is there needs to be some sort of amendment or something different to this way he's able to delay it. If he wants to delay it as long as he can, it helps his client. Good for him.
Well, all I'm saying is in the professional rules right now, I could find nothing that they could charge him with to disbar him that says what he's doing is wrong.
Right. And I say there shouldn't be. But I think they might be able to find something if he's sanctioned using dilatory tactics, even though it's not to the detriment of your client. If you're using dilatory tactics, he'd be held in contempt of court, like I had said previously.
Well, he's very contemptible.
I would think so, but I think it's going to be somebody from the judiciary who's going to have to step up and do this.
Yeah, that's a black eye for the whole state, if you ask me.
There was there's one man who was charged with enticing a child for indecent exposures. Basically, he's been awaiting trial since 2009. Ralston has filed for 14 delays. There's one case that's been more than 5 years since a 14-year-old girl told police that a traveling evangelist who preached at her church and stayed over in her home raped her and molested her. That case has been put off at least 8 times. The victim in that case is now a young adult and says she's trying every week to heal, but also must preserve every memory of that night in case she's ever cross-examined. Her parents told the Atlanta Journal Constitution. The parent went on saying, "I just feel like this attorney is wounding my daughter over and over again," her mother said. "Every time we get our hopes up and get some release from the past, it's always a setback. There's no closure. There's no moving forward to this. I think Mr. Ralston knows exactly what he's doing." And Association of Prosecuting Attorneys, David Lebon, he's the president of this association, he said basically stalling can be an effective defense tactic and allows passage of time to ravage the state's evidence against the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
He said, as the years pass, victims become frustrated and give up. Witnesses back out of testifying. Child victims grew up into less sympathetic adults, diminishing the impact on the jury. Police officers and investigators retire and move on. Evidence gets lost. Memories fade. Prosecutors become more willing to drop or reduce charges.
And I'm sure he's aware of all that. That's part of what he's doing.
Yeah. It said basically that his DUI cases take 2 to 3 times longer to settle than most murder cases. A DUI case. Two to three times as long as a murder
case.
That's
ridiculous. That is absolutely violates... You know, when you talked about when we were talking about how you become a lawyer and the different tests you have to take and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was mostly ethics. It's not legal questions, but they're ethical questions, and it violates every kind of ethics there is in your what you owe your fellow man.
Well, I do think it violates the fact that he is abusing his power as the Speaker of the House.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's stepping outside of what he should be doing as an attorney. I mean, if it benefits his client,
I still think it's morally wrong.
You're probably right. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm thinking if you can delay a case and delay a case and delay a case, you know, within reason.
And you live with the fact that you got a guy that was convicted of, or he's waiting to be tried for a DUI homicide, and he's still out driving, maybe killing other people, and that's okay.
Well,
you've got a guy that molested young children, and he's still running free. That's okay. Let him run around still, because I'm his lawyer, and I kept him out. That's just wrong.
He's probably not driving. The reason he's not driving is because there's 2 parts for a DUI. There's usually an administrative suspension that comes directly from the DMV, and that's kind of different than the actual DUI.
So it's the civil part of it.
Yeah, so this is actually the criminal part of it where he would be charged with DUI. But I would guarantee that the person lost their license for a period of time. So I think just saying blanket out there, well, they're still out there driving around. They're probably not.
Well, as my example of the West Virginia man last week,
yeah,
that not having a license doesn't stop them. They still drive anyway.
That's true.
You can revoke it all you want. But it said that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said it checked 21 cases, and he had filed 57 requests for continuance of those 21 cases, and more than 75% of them fell outside the legislative session.
The law you're talking about is a OCGA, which original code of Georgia annotated, maybe? I don't know. 17826 says grounds for granting of continuances. As a member of the General Assembly who is a party to or the attorney for a party to a case which is pending in any trial or appellate court or before any administrative agency of this state shall be granted a continuance and stay of the case. And that's pretty broad. It says shall be granted. The continuance and stay shall apply to all aspects of the case, including but not limited to the filing and serving of an answer to the complaint, the making of any discovery or motion, or any response to subpoena, discovery, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I mean, it goes on and on. And then also, Part B of that says that a continuance and stay shall also be granted for such other times as the member of the General Assembly or staff member certifies to the court that his or her presence elsewhere is required by his or her duties with the General Assembly. So that's the catch-all that you were talking about too. So, I mean, it's very broad, and it doesn't say the court may in their discretion grant continuance. It says shall grant.
You have to.
Yeah. One other thing I saw in here too, under the Georgia Code as well, and it's under Chapter 17.17.1, Declaration of Policy. It says the Georgia Assembly hereby finds and declares it to be the policy of this state that victims of crimes should be accorded certain basic rights, just as the accused are accorded certain basic rights.
Exactly.
These include the right to reasonable, accurate, and timely notice of any scheduled court proceedings or changes, the right to reasonable, accurate, and timely notice of the arrest, release, or escape, the right not to be excluded from any scheduled court proceeding, the right to be heard at any scheduled court proceeding involving the release, plea, or sentencing of the accused, the right to file a written objection in any parole proceeding, the right to confer with the prosecuting attorney in any criminal prosecution, the right to restitution as provided by law, the right to proceeding free from unreasonable delay, and the right to be treated fairly with dignity for all criminal agencies.
So, yeah, but I didn't hear anything in there that said that they have the right to be tried at in a speedy thing.
Well, number 8 said the right to proceedings free from unreasonable delay.
Yeah, but with the way the law is, this you'd have to prove that's an unreasonable delay when the law says he can ask for a delay whenever he wants.
Well, I think basically to bring this situation to a head, the prosecuting attorney can object to this letter or this motion to stay it and can cite possibly to this victim's policy and say, the judge under 17.17.1, subsection 8, the right to proceedings free from unreasonable delay. The victim has this right. This victim has been sitting here for 5 years waiting to get closure on this. And by allowing this court to continue this again based on this is a travesty of justice. I think basically the prosecuting attorneys in these cases need to step up too and be a bit more zealous in representing what is basically kind of their client, the victim. I mean, even though the state is really their client, the victim is the byproduct of that.
Well, it gets back to the guy's political clout. He's the Speaker of the House, so he's got political clout. Now, most of your prosecutors, they're in elected positions. You know?
It's true.
So you start stirring stuff up, and it's said like this guy, he contributes to the Republican Party. There was like, it said that he had contributed to all but one of the people on the ethics committee a total of $300,000, because you're allowed to contribute from your campaign cash to other people's campaign cash. So he had contributed over $300,000 to everybody, the other Republicans that happened to be on the ethics committee that would be making any judgment. So, you know, how could a lot of these people, oh, well, now if we turn against him now, we're going to lose that money too, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of things that go on with that, you know, when people start to do it. And it's terrible when a person of that position takes that kind of stance and then people are afraid to do anything because of what retribution might take place.
Yeah, that's true. But here's the thing. We don't know. I doubt. We don't know if there's been any kind of threats that there would be retribution for standing up against this guy. We just kind of guess that would be the case why people don't want to do it.
Well, I would say that probably there's some examples of things that have happened in the past where people would cite that might be just amongst themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, not made public or something like that.
Well, I would be curious. I mean, has this happened before? Has somebody really tried to push a case to trial and he thought, okay, I'm going to get you. I'm going to support your opponent in the prosecuting attorney race.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, well, very well could be, or just the threat of it was enough to keep people from challenging
right.
it.
Well, I don't agree with, I mean, I understand why he's doing it. And I think you do have to zealously represent your client. Do I think he's done anything against the bar? I don't know. I mean, I have to take a look at it more, but I mean, he is zealously representing his client. I mean, it's not his job to protect the other side. The other side needs to protect themselves. So I guess really that puts the prosecuting attorney maybe in a bad spot, but you got to pick which horse you're going to ride.
Yeah.
You're going to ride the public and fix this outcry, or are you going to cater to the politician.
Well, I hope that they fix the outcry, because that is absolutely ridiculous. I tried to find out how many other states have that same type law, and I couldn't get Google to tell me anything.
I looked it up, and there's actually quite a few that have something similar to it, which I understand why it exists.
Yeah.
There needs to be...
If used properly.
If used properly and judiciously, I think it's probably a good thing. Yeah. Because we want people who are able, who are successful people in their professions, to be able to go and go to the Senate and go to the House and represent people. We want people who are otherwise, we don't want somebody who's just sitting around not doing anything and say, sure, I'll go up there for 40 days and pass some laws. I got nothing else better to do.
Right.
We want people who are busy individuals who are driven to do these kinds of things.
Yeah.
At the same time, we don't want them to be punished for going up there and doing their civic duty like that.
Exactly.
But at the same time, it is definitely ripe for abuse, obviously. Mm-hmm. So,
well, right next door in Alabama, you have a case where the Speaker of the House in Alabama, a guy named Mike Hubbard, he's been indicted on 23 felony ethics charges. And part of it was the same type thing. They have that kind of law, and he was using that to, for the advantage of his clients. Now, he's got some other things going on, too, where they think that there was some stuff he did from his position that he benefited from financially.
Yeah.
So that was some of the other ethics violations, but part of it also had to do with him delaying tactics.
Well, I mean, now that could be another avenue too, because most states do have some sort of law which says you cannot benefit from your elected position. And if you could show that nexus that this Georgia Speaker of the House is benefiting from his elected position, or basically guaranteeing people that I'm going to use my position to delay it, then...
Well, you gave a quote from that one guy.
Yeah, well, that's a quote from the one guy. That's not a quote from...
No, but that's what he said. He said he's worth every penny of it. He's expensive, but he's worth every penny. So he's saying, I went to him because that's what he was going to do.
Well, but I'm saying if you have Shell, for example, in a client consult or something like that, basically saying to somebody, your case is never going to see trial, and here's why it's never going to see trial. I'm the Speaker of the House. I can delay this inevitably.
I'll delay it till they're all dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to make money, see? We're going to make money.
I was just twirling my mustache, too.
Yeah.
But no, if you can do...
Snidely whiplash.
If you could show that this guy was doing that, then I think you would definitely have a corruption charge against him, or that he was using his public position to do something improper.
Go in with a wire on.
Yeah, it could happen. But it depends. I mean, I don't know if Georgia's...
Can you speak up? My chest can't hear you.
It depends, too, because I don't know if Georgia's a one-party or a two-party state. Do you remember we talked about that before?
A one-party or a two-party state?
With regard to recording somebody?
Oh, yeah. As to whether that if you do that, you have to have permission or not.
That's right. In places like Florida, I know it's what called a two-party state. So if I'm going to record you, I have to have your permission to record you. Mm-hmm. And if I do it without telling you, it's actually a misdemeanor to do that. Whereas in West Virginia, as long as one party consents, the person actually doing the recording, it's fine. So,
well, that was part of what came up on the Robert Kraft thing there on his trial. Well, they haven't had the trial, but on his plea, is his lawyer tried to contend that those cameras were placed in the rooms illegally. Therefore, any evidence from them was fruit of the poisonous tree, or however they say that.
Right. So that's kind of how they say it.
Is that kind of, it's poisonous fruit from the poisonous tree?
Well, they were actually, placed there by law enforcement, or were they placed there by...
They were placed by law enforcement.
They were placed
because they had already gotten information that this place was dealing in human trafficking. Mm-hmm. So that's what it was to try to prove the human trafficking. So they had gone in, put in surveillance cameras to see what was going on.
Well, no, they might have been able to get like some sort of warrant to do that as well.
I would think they must have.
Yeah, it's like a wiretap. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm talking about any Joe off the street trying to record somebody.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the thing out of Georgia. It's a very strange situation that... You wouldn't think would be happening, but it is.
Well, you wouldn't think somebody would want to be that blatant about it, where everybody knows about it and talks about it, and you're supposedly someone representing the state.
Yeah.
You know, where's the accountability that the people that elect this guy keep elected him, if that's a common thing? Because it's not like he just started doing it. It's been going on a while.
I do think that sometimes delaying cases a little bit can be beneficial to the defense. Sometimes it's good to kind of pump the brakes a little bit and slow things down. The reason I see it a lot of times is that whenever a crime happens, especially if it's one where it's very emotionally charged and people are really upset about it, kind of a high especially if it's in the press too. If it's in the paper, gets a lot of press. Sometimes it's a good idea to slow the pace down as much as you can. You know, not using dilatory tactics or anything like that, but really try to let cooler heads prevail, let things calm down a little bit. And that incentivizes, I think, the prosecutor to offer a bit better plea deal sometimes too, because the prosecutor really have their hands tied when some of these like cases go to court and they're like high profile cases. Prosecutor can't really make a deal on them. Mm-hmm. They just can't. You have to slow it down a little bit, pump the brakes, kind of say, okay, let's let this blow over a little bit. Let's just head down to the Winchester and wait till this whole thing blows over a little bit. That kind of type of approach to it. So
the Winchester, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I have no problem with that if it's, you know, like, you know, we're not prepared for it. We need a little bit more time to get this ready. You know, I have a witness that came up late, you know, in other words, standard things. Mm-hmm. But when somebody is using a position of power to just basically circumvent the law, that's what I have trouble with. And that's what I see that guy doing.
We can get to legal briefs here in a second, but I got one really funny, true judge quote that happened to a friend of mine.
Was it Judge Judy?
No, it was not.
Okay.
It was a judge down in Florida, and it was a personal injury case, and my friend was one of the attorneys on it. In this case, I think it was like 5 or 6 years old, which, I mean, is pretty daggone old for a case. I mean, mm-hmm. It's odd that you don't get a case to trial before that.
A
civil case. Mm-hmm. And the judge, they were at some sort of scheduling conference, probably still going through discovery or trying to hammer something out. And the judge looked and said to the lawyers, gentlemen, this case has been pending longer than World War II. Do you think you guys can work it out since the world fought a war in that amount of time? Do you think you all can work this out before then? It was like a very appropriate question, because think about it.
Yeah.
World War II was fought and won in a time period shorter than this.
Yeah.
And this is a court case about a car crash. Let's move it along. That always stuck with me.
I think that was some good judgeship logic.
There you go. Well, that's going to bring us to
legal briefs.
So legal briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy about different legal terms and see if he can remember them.
All right. I will try.
The first term I'm going to ask you about is tempus fugit.
You never said tempus fugit.
I never did, but I said an English version of it. So what does it mean?
It means fast and furious.
It's time flies.
Time flies.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you didn't say it, though. Time flies on the garbage can.
I kind of said it. I threw that in early.
Does that have to do with a speedy trial? Just for the heck of it.
Yeah, why not? Throw it in there.
Okay. Tempus fugit.
Dilatory tactic.
Well, that's a stall tactic that you do something. If you do it and get caught, then the judge can get you for contempt of court.
But what's the one key thing that makes it dilatory as opposed to just actual good old-fashioned lawyering?
If there's no good reason behind it.
That's right. It's baseless. If it's baseless motions you're filing, things like that. Then
Baseless as a lawyer who does it.
It's dilatory.
Yeah.
What is the prompt presentment clause?
The prompt presentment? Mm-hmm. That means when you arrest somebody, you have to get them to a magistrate judge right away.
That's right. Any confession that gets in there at longer than the prompt presentment window can actually be excluded. So
we don't want that.
And lastly, what is the speedy trial?
A speedy trial. Well, it's not defined, although they did try to define it as 70 days in that act that they did in 1974. That 70 days was kind of a guideline as mm-hmm. far as a speedy trial.
Okay.
Now it can be delayed for other things. But
well, basically, what I'm looking for is a speedy trial is a clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the Sixth Amendment.
That's right. And basically, it says that all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial. The accused, not everyone else, just the accused.
That's right. Nobody else gets one, just him.
So that's going to do it for legal briefs.
Well, I've got one for you.
Okay.
What is the street term for a dilatory tactic?
The street term for the dilatory tactic. I don't know. What is it?
Dick move.
Huh. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.